Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents an episode of The Disruptors.
Welcome to Accounting Disruptor Conversation. I'm your host, Liz Farr from CPA Trendlines, and today we're doing something a little different. I am going to be talking to people who are doing things a little different from your father's or maybe your grandfather's CPA firm. And my guests today are Julie Shipp and Jason Blummer, leaders of Blummer CPAs and the Thrival CPA Network. How are you guys today?
Doing good.
Good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Liz. We appreciate it.
Well, it's a real treat to have you two on here because, as I was saying to Jason before we started recording, Thrivecast has always just been a beacon of hope and light for me for the CPA profession.
That's awesome. I hope it is for other people too. That's part of our purpose and mission to help firm entrepreneurs. So they need a lot of help like me. So I hope we can help.
Yeah. Well, first, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about your firm, like where you're located, what you do, kinds of clients, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been leading my dad started our firm in 97. I've been leading the firm for 20 years. Julie's been with me for 10 or well, my longer than that, right, Julie? Good grief.
Going on 11 now.
Going on 11. Yeah. Okay. So we've been together that long. And we serve exclusively, agencies, creative agencies, larger agencies. And then also we're adding in a nonprofit niche. So we're always playing with a new focus, client focus, in a market. So those are the things we do. We only serve businesses, so we only serve entrepreneurs. We don't have a tax 1040 model of a firm. We kind of got rid of that eight or so years ago. We don't have a location. We don't exist in an office, so we're a virtual firm, and we've been doing that for a decade. So we've learned a lot about being virtual, how to do that in a real structured way, and we have team all over the country, too. And also the people behind me are loud in the next office. So if you hear them, I'm sorry on the podcast. So they're always yelling on the phone. So there we go.
That's okay.
So, but Julie, did I leave anything off about our client base or anything?
No, I mean, we've been virtual the full time I've been here, and that's been a journey starting from when there was no such thing to now, when it's the thing. And so, I think you hit it all.
Okay, cool. All
right. Now, how is your firm structured? What roles do the two of you lead? Because it's a little different from most CPA firms.
Yeah, I'll let Julie answer that one. She helped me learn how to structure a firm.
We just decided together really to take more of a corporate structure in an entrepreneurial organization where we leave ownership at the door. Ownership's not part of our structure, our decision-making structure. And so we take on roles of Jason's CEO and visionary of the firm, and I'm the COO and what we call the integrator, the operations person. I'm not a technical partner. He's our technical partner. And then together, we lead a three-person leadership team. And they lead the larger team of our CPAs, our accountants. And then we have an operations team as well that support the function of the firm and Thrival together.
Yeah. So I think, Liz, you've been in firms. So the most of the time, traditional firms operate with a partner group, so to speak. Uh-huh. So that consensus structure sometimes doesn't work. So Julie and I have taken on very specific roles. And I guess early on, Julie, we figured out the The ownership is a legal reflection of the companies, but they do not reflect anything we do together in our roles. And that's really helped us because we wrestle through staying on the same page about decisions, but nobody can pull a trump card and go, well, I own more. I'm going to decide this and we're moving on. That's just not one of our possibilities. So we don't do it and we never have. Now that means we have to stay in a room and wrestle through things. And sometimes we flat out disagree and go, well, we're going to have to call it and move on. But I guess, Julie, when we call it and move on, we're both on the page.
It's 100-100. I think that's how we refer to it. You know, we have our owner percentages. That's all good and well. But in the firm, in our roles, I mean, if we were whatever, if we were 60-40 owners, I'm not showing up 40%. I'm showing up 100%. So right. I should be able to be 100% in my role. And yep. have 100% the authority of my role, likewise yourself. And so I think that was sort of the philosophy of why we chose to walk down that road so that we're 100-100, same page, and that way we move forward together.
Yeah. It just takes a lot of, you know, it takes a lot of trust to do that with another person to kind of set ownership at the door and go, that actually has no bearing on the operations. You have to really trust the other person. And Julie and I do. So we're going to bring it up. We're going to talk about transparently and openly, you know, and confidentially about our strategic decisions. If we disagree, we don't hide that. There's no passive aggressive type way we operate. We're like, I disagree with that. And here's why. And the other person stops and listens. You know, there's just a lot of honor and respect that come from that kind of trust. I don't guess it would work with everybody, but Julie and I have agreed it's going to work for us. Or we're not going to do it. So,
well, that's great. I mean, there are so many firms I was at where there was some managing partner who owned just 51%.
Right. Yeah.
And they could make the final decisions. And
that's right.
Didn't always work that way.
No, it didn't work. It doesn't work well.
No. Now, what would you guys say is the secret sauce of Blummer CPAs? What makes your firm so different?
Well, so probably a lot of things. I think we have the word proactive in our purpose statement, and I think a lot of us in firms want to call ourselves proactive, but really intentionality is pretty much the lifeblood of everything we do. There are stated principles and purposes behind everything. The market we've chosen to serve, the way we price, who we work with, who we won't work with, how we hire, how we create hiring processes, how we onboard team, the way we serve clients. It all has a very stated intention and purpose. And a lot of times we're teaching our team a lot of those things from our purpose. I think practically, I guess, Julie, we see a lot of that come out in our planning. We plan everything. And, you know, just the philosophy of the way we serve. So I don't know, Julie, do you have any other thoughts about our intentionality in planning? That's huge for us, I think.
Those are key pieces, definitely of how we move things forward. And then it's a big time investment too to then impart that to a team, mm-hmm. as opposed mm-hmm. to only teaching them what they're working on, but the how and the why and the all of the things that are behind what they're doing every day, the purpose is it's a fairly large time investment, but it pays off. And comes out through client service and then also through the way the team work together, which is how we're structured.
Yeah. I think, Liz, in regards to another question you have that you wanted to ask us, this intentionality has a lot to do with how we hire, which Julie, you mentioned, but as an example, well, there's a, you know, when we hire team, they step into this orientation training process with our firm that takes months to go through. And, you know, some of the team are not, they're not really always used to it. and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Some come from a great firm location. Some come from a firm that was not intentional at all, but we have to walk them through and continually, you know, convince them that this intentionality is going to pay off huge benefits later on. Cause sometimes they're like, wow, this is a lot of training. And it's training in how we say things, how we do things, how we present our brand, how consistent we are among the team, you know, how we you know, sort things and store things in our box filing cabinet online. These, everything has a purpose so that we can serve in a very intentional, high advisory way. And it just takes so much work. Intentionality takes huge amounts of work and time. So we find our secret sauce is being intentional, but it means we can't be a fast firm. You can't be quick. You have to be methodical. I don't know, Julie, if that's the right thing. We're fast in a lot of things, maybe, but
I think depth is a big piece of it and a big part of it. It's really fun developing the team in that way and then seeing it come back. One thing we do in that orientation and training period Jason mentioned is we've developed a document, and the team helped us do it, and Jason did it as well, but the Blummer Financial Principles that we use in our advisement. And when a new team comes on and they're in their first advisory meeting, they'll go to the meeting with Jason, but Jason will lead the meeting the first time. And the new team member takes those principles and critiques him, which is an odd place to be. You're a new team member and you're critiquing your boss and the partner in the firm, but we want that vulnerability too. I mean, we hire smart people. They are professionals. They have so much knowledge that we need to learn and grow from, as well as them learning and growing in the firm. And so it puts them in a little odd place initially, but they watch it be modeled and they critique Jason against our framework. And then the next time they give it a go and he critiques them. And it's really wonderful to watch a team member grow in that way and then to see how they help us grow by what they bring uniquely to that situation.
Oh, that's a lot of fun.
That's just so amazing, because at a firm where I spent 11 years, the best we had was this pretty little document that was framed on our break room wall. and that's about as far as it went.
Well, that, you know, that stuff doesn't really motivate people really to pour their life into the mission and purpose of a firm. So it's, you know, Julie and I have to display all this way more than anybody. If our team want to commit to our purpose, we have to talk a lot about our purpose and why we do things. And sometimes there's correction related to that. It's like, hey, we don't reply to clients that way. We talked about that in orientation. Remember, here's why we're displaying and portraying a different thing to our market. So it just takes, you know, we all get busy and we're like, I don't want to say something to that person. I'm going to finish my tax returns and leave for the day. And sometimes you're writing a lot about the purpose and mission over and over and over to your team. But it does pay off long term when you do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can really see that. And that kind of segues into my next question about talent, because I can tell that you really do invest a lot in your talent, which has been a huge challenge for accounting firms. Now, besides that intensive onboarding process, what are some of the other things that you do to make it better for your team members?
You mean once they're on the team?
Once they're on the team.
To find them? The operations team and I have, we call them rhythms, but they are patterns of investment in new team touches. I like to say in a virtual culture versus an in-person culture, communication is probably 10 times as necessary, 10 times as often. And I think the same way about creating a sticky culture. it might occur naturally in an environment where I'm in an office and I can look over and see you, Liz, and know, you know, I can talk to you and I can, we have had to develop a lot of ways to create engagement from this, the very simplest things of in our chat system. We have a water cooler room. I'm sure a lot of people do that. And, but the leadership team have a rhythm and it's a task that hits our dashboards to go and post something in water cooler to get some engagement, not just so we don't get busy and forget. And that gets pushed away. We're always trying to create that kind of engagement with them. We do team-wide retreats together. One year they'll be virtual, another they'll be in person so that we can meet face-to-face as often as possible. That's challenging. It's expensive. Can't always do it, but we try. Our weekly team meeting for us is it's an hour on noon every Wednesday, and it's not optional. Everyone's required to be there, but it's also not client focused. In fact, that's a no-no. We can't talk about clients or work in that meeting. And the team lead it. It rotates through the team and they bring their own flavor. One of the components we use there, we take our core values and we do what we call core value call outs. And in those, you come to the meeting, every team member comes to the meeting having caught someone else in some way exhibiting the core values, and we call it out in the meeting. Liz, I saw you doing this in this way with this client. Collaboration leads to strength, you know, high value, high service. And so we're washing that cultural core value through our team on a weekly basis, and they're pushing it back out to one another in forms of praise and encouragement. Those are just kind of little simple things that we do that we really enjoy doing with the team.
Yeah. Sure. I didn't add that stuff when I first started leading the firm. So the cultural stuff was things I didn't focus on as much. And I just, when we went virtual, I thought, this is going to be awesome. We're all virtual, go work at home. And that didn't work out really well.
No.
Cause people go do their own thing. We had people disappear. They would become distracted and they're not efficient. And so, all the things Julie just talked about are things she really has a heart for, brought into the firm, even things I didn't understand. And now it just, we wash this over the team every week and they're just starting to do the work of culture building. They build each other up. But even more practically, to get the right people in, you know, when we hire, we have to go through buckets of resumes. We have to go, you know, Julie goes through the first step of, you know, culling hundreds of resumes. Then I do a technical review, and then we go through a 5 or 6 step process in our hiring to come down to hopefully 2 to 3 choices. And then we make a choice to somebody. And then they enter into orientation for the first week. And then they go into a training program for 3 to 6 months. So it is so massive, the investment we make in our team. And when it's the right people, these smart people become just so much stronger, bonded together inside of our firm's processes. And it creates a lot of strength, I guess, for us, Julie. And then we're able to kind of pull off. Then we can go do harder growth moves because we got this strong team that's like, where are we going? We're in the boat. We're going in the same direction. Just point us in the right direction. We're going to go kill it. And we all go do it together. But you have to do a lot of intentional investment up front to actually ask them to go do those things with you. They have to know we actually care about them. And so we tell our team we love them a lot because we actually love, we're grateful for them. And so we do love them. So we tell them that. So I don't know, Julie, anymore. That's a huge thing. Yeah, the talent.
I could talk for an hour about that. It's our team are our biggest asset and our greatest joy. I mean, they make possible the work we do and they're engaged in doing meaningful work with us. I mean, that's a privilege that people would align themselves and say, yeah, I want to do that work with you. I want to shoulder to shoulder with you and serve this group of of business owners. And so it's an honor to get to work alongside our team.
Yeah. And a firm like that, it's more than just a job, but it's a way to bring your own internal purpose and your own internal vision to what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And I had to move. Now I got a halo. The sun's coming into my window. It's starting to cut across. It does this every 4:30 every day. So, so if I have a halo, maybe it's because I'm an angel, I guess. So.
Sorry. It's because you're such an angelic leader.
That's right.
That's what it is.
It's got to be that, Liz. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, what are some things that you do at your firm that you wish other firm owners would do?
Well, it's a funny question because we probably feel like we struggle with so much, right? And probably every firm leaders, all firm leaders can see a lot of their mistakes. So, so we don't always get it right, but I think we do have a heart for the profession, and our profession is just incredibly valuable to people's lives, to entrepreneurs, small businesses. It really is. We are the engines that help run our economy. So we love what our profession does, but I think they really miss the mark on pricing for their value. They really, something we call their already value. Like, and by already value, we mean your price is already low. It's not even that you need to raise your price. It's already a price that's way lower than the value you're already giving, you know, to the market. So even if you raise your price, a lot of times you're just bringing it up to the value of what you are already giving to entrepreneurs and business owners and individuals. So I think, I don't know why we really shy away from that. It can have something to do with some practical things like our pricing models or billing models. You know, there's been a lot of change in the past 10 or 15 years on value pricing. You know, that's a huge conversation in our profession. We believe in those things. We value priced, you know, solely for the past decade. We did billing by the hour before that, but we came to believe it was not right. And now we see our ability to price all of our services up front before we deliver them. And we've seen being able to get a lot of our value out of that price, exchange it for the value we're delivering. So I would say that we also find a lot of value in pricing new services. So anytime we price a brand new service, something we've not delivered before, but we still technically know how to really do it, we'll package and create new services. That always gives us an opportunity to learn a lot. We learn so much about how we could have priced better, because we don't always get it right the first time.
Right.
You know, but we'll create a new service, price it for $5,000. The next time we'll do it for 10, because we'll go, oh, right. Wait, we're like, wow, we spent like 3 months on that thing. We should have charged a lot more. So we'll double it the next time and go, that was about right. And we learn so much in our, you know, we're just pricing based upon the value we're delivering. So I would say that's probably one of our biggest things we wish firms would do better that we still struggle with and probably always will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pricing is a biggie, and that I think I see discussions on Twitter and Facebook about that every day about pricing.
For sure. I think it's one of those things that it's not difficult, but it is hard to do.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. It is as simple as going, I want to do this for you and I want you to pay me this much money to do it.
Right.
It really is as simple as going, I'm not going to do tax returns for less than $2,000 a piece. I'm just not. So that's as simple as it can be. But then you got to pitch it to people. You got to, you know, convince clients of your value. So it can be a long, difficult process that puts you in uncomfortable situations that I think allow us to grow. So I wish firms would would take on some of that work in pricing. It really would help them grow, make more money, and just be a greater mm-hmm. value to their clients, I think.
Oh, I agree yeah. completely. Yeah. Now, what are some things that you two stopped doing that made a difference? Mm. Are there things you stopped doing as a firm or as individuals?
I'll let Julie take that one.
Thanks.
I'll let you have that one.
Probably early on, one thing we stopped doing was getting in each other's lanes. As really as part in our partnership and our ownership and the roles we fill as visionary integrator, we were crossing in and out of each other's lanes, and it really diluted the work we could do together if we were both leveraging our best gifts and abilities and purpose in, of our roles. And so that's something we really came to define really after the first year. Jason, that's right. And then
yeah, for sure.
Beyond that, we really hit how we function best together as partners and then as CEO and visionary, I mean, as visionary and integrator. And so that's been one of the big things that we've changed as partners and individuals. I think probably another one for us was really learning to leverage time appropriately mm-hmm. and not be a slave to time. But that time became a thing we use and plan and control so that we are getting the most out of, I mean, where we spend our working days is often usually the largest part of our time. And so mm-hmm. using that uber intentionally every moment of the day that we're working is that's one of the things that's really driven us forward in the team too. We all do something together called calendar work blocking. And it's just that visual representation of how we're spending our professional hours each day, where we're intersecting, collaborating together, how we're serving clients and making that the most intentional use of time. That's been a big one, I think, for us. And that's something we started as a firm. Something we stopped as a firm probably, Jason, was moving you out of technical service over time and putting that work in the hands of an accomplished, smart team that love yeah. that work and do it very well. That's where they want to thrive and grow. And I think that was a big important step for us to make for the firm was to stop having you in client service as much. And then same for me in operations too. I was in the internal finance area in the firm and then driving a lot of the operations myself for the firm, for Blummer and Thrival. And so moving away from that and having that in the capable hands of some of our leadership team has just made us better and has freed us up to do some of the work where we thrive and are more appropriately gifted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think practically you'll see us fulfill roles in different ways. Like people have perceptions of a CEO and COO. And as the CEO, you're leading everything, right? You lead everything, but a CEO's role is very defined. It's meant to be a visionary role. It's very what we call market focused. It's focused on the value of the market we're meant to portray. It has a lot of service and selling components, leadership and mission. But internally, when we're leading leadership team meetings, you'll find Julie leads those, and I'm on mute a lot because she's the CEO of the operations, really. So it's even the titles can be, misnomers sometimes. And I'm on mute because the meetings are going so fast. Sometimes I can't even keep up. But that's the thing. Operations moves very quickly. It's a very efficient yes. movement and department of a firm. And people don't necessarily know that. So Julie's taught our team and me those things. And so I'm there supporting operations in some of those leadership meetings. I don't lead them. She brings the agenda. She crafts it. But just those little particulars are things, I guess, Julie, we had to learn over years and years of going, well, what do I do in the lane when I'm pitching a new contract? Or what do I do in my lane when I'm in an ops meeting with you? Or what do you do when we're in coaching and consulting together? All of those lanes you just have to define over time. You just get better and better, you know, at those things. So those are some examples.
That's true. And in the work too, getting away from technical work really freed our team up to do their best work and kept you from being a bottleneck to their work because you were needing to do so many other things as an owner. You were slowing down the very good work that they could do, not intentionally, but just, you know, because you couldn't get to things that you needed to do to help them. So that also was a very big change for us and for the team that they liked.
Oh, yeah. And that was our goal, you know, to try to move, you know, Julie, you and I had that goal a long time ago. It's to move me out of technical services. And it took years to pull that off. Now we have team that are smarter technically than me. And it's like, hey, will you build a budget for this client? You're like, oh, wow. I never would have built the budget that way. That's pretty crazy. A very, very technical and very specific. So you get a lot of value when you actually get in your lane and try to perform that lane for the value of the company. It's what we try to do.
Well, it's such a different way of being a leader to a firm than I ever experienced, where the owners had their fingers in every single piece of the organization, and then they couldn't figure out why they were so exhausted all the time. Well, I don't know. Now, on the Thrivecast, Jason, you talk sometimes about blowing things up in your firm, which and I love that phrase.
Yeah.
Now, what is the most valuable mistake that you made in your firm?
Wow.
It can be either of you or both.
Well, there's a lot of those. So
I was just thinking that.
there's a lot of mistakes. I think we probably, I don't know how many years ago, we really set out intentionally. This was very purposeful to build a leadership team. We knew that was the next thing we needed to do because Julie and I are overwhelmed, right? CEO and COO means also everything else, right? You know, take the trash out and all those kind of things. So when you get large enough, you have to start adding people that are a little bit closer to the owners and the leaders and say, y'all are going to be really de facto leaders. And a lot of times we say they are leaders. They are a proxy leader to us, which means we invite a leadership team to be on, you know, to be on the leadership team with us, but we say, we want you to lead the way we would lead. So now I can't be with 15 people, but we can be with 3 people. So we lead this 5-person leadership team, which includes Julie and I, and now they can go lead a larger group of people. That's how you leverage the strengths of multiple people as a firm grows. And we, you know, we just like anything, we had to learn how to lead leaders. And, you know, Julie and I were leading, but then when we invited people to be leaders with us, we found out, oh, they're not exactly doing what we would want to do. And they're coming to us transparently going, I don't know what to tell this person. They keep asking me stuff and I keep telling them this purpose y'all told me, and I don't know what else to say. And so we probably a big mistake is we didn't realize we needed to invest a lot in leadership education. And really teaching them how to be leaders, not technically. They can do the CPA stuff and the operational leadership stuff, but they need to know how to lead people. You know, when people push back, because smart team push back, they go, why? Why are we doing it that way? And we love that. And we invite that into our culture. So you got to know how to answer a lot of why questions sometimes and not get frustrated by it, you know, because I want to go, just do it because I said, do it. And that's not a great leadership move at all.
No.
So, you know, so I think not investing in our leaders, teaching them, training them, was that's probably hurt us in a, you know, where there's some very specific ways that we've probably been hurt by that. But I don't know, Julie, would you add anything to investing in leaders? And
no, we just should have done it earlier. We should have developed leadership much earlier, even before we installed leadership. We should have been really more focused on it, you know, but it's the tyranny of the urgent, not making an excuse, just saying the fact. I mean, it was a tyranny of the urgent at the time, and it didn't feel like there was time to do that, but we should have created the time to do that and been more intentional instead of having to play catch up. You know, when we did get it installed, we're seeing the fruits of that now. But 3 or 4 years ago, we should have started probably 2 or 3 years before that. And so we're just now really seeing the fruits of the development and the investment there.
That is such a key skill to teach. And I applaud you for recognizing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
know,
it's hard to teach.
Yeah. And I think I'm mostly intrigued by leadership skills because I experienced so many really terrible leaders in my career. So, you know, we know what bad leadership is because we so rarely see really great leaders.
Yeah. It's so sad, you know, Liz, for you to say, I just really have been with some very poor leaders. And you want to say to those people, do you know the power you had to be or the encouragement you had with Liz, like you had her with you? And we can, you know, squander a lot of that time. We have such an impactful investment that we can make as leaders. We really do. We impact our teams a lot, sometimes for bad, sometimes for good. And it's just every single day we have such a power to really encourage people or really to call them very transparently back into their lane, challenge them to work efficiently, work with a purpose, work with a mission, and, you know, not to shy away from the confrontation that takes. Sometimes it helps us all grow. And you know, they say leadership is lonely at the top. It is, because it's like, who's doing that for us? Well, and that's the value of, you know, Julie and I being in partners together. We get to do that for each other, you know, at the level of owners. We get to go, no, that's not how our relationship's going to work. That's not how we have agreed to do it. And it just makes us better when we get into those very trusted, real relationships. That's the power of leadership. And it, you know, it stinks that it's been squandered, I think, in our profession a lot of times, unfortunately.
Yeah. No. It really is. Mm-hmm. Now Blummer CPAs isn't the only business that you two lead. Can you tell us a little bit about the Thrival CPA Network?
Yes. Yeah, that has a lot of our heart and purpose tied up in it. So a lot of what we do in Blummer, we learn a lot of things in our firm, right? Because we're running a virtual firm that's focused on a market with pricing and hiring, very intentional ways we do things. And we teach a lot of that to our Thrival members. So, and Thrival started probably I was writing a Thrival.com blog on like a Blogspot site probably 15 years ago, I think, something like that, so long ago. So it started as my thoughts and ideas about running a profession. And I think about 15 years ago, what I knew, I'm like, oh, it's so embarrassing to think about what I was trying to tell people, but I couldn't help it. I wanted to talk, but it quickly turned into a community when I was learning to lead a firm and consult and do some of the things that I wanted to try. And so I started meeting people on Twitter, you know, other firm owners around 2008, and we started calling each other, and then we started meeting. And it's like, oh God, this community of people that help each other and like don't charge each other. It was wild, you know? So I launched a community and said, I want to formalize us actually being together. And it didn't have a price when we did that because I just wanted to have people around me that were smart to help. But now it's grown into, oh my gosh, we have two programs we lead, curriculum-based programs we lead in our growth model that run from July to January every year, our foundations and our scaling programs. We have three different membership levels. They all go into community groups monthly. We have an annual conference, Deeper Weekend, that Julie and I lead that a lot of people know about. We write and produce content for. We have courses online. We produce a lot of content. So there are so many things we do in Thrival. It, you know, we have a whole team that runs it, that, you know, that organization is run just as intentionally with a purpose and mission. And that is, Julie, I guess that's to help entrepreneurs, firm entrepreneurs. That's what we're about. You know,
that's the mission. That's the goal.
Yeah. 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 So we're an entrepreneurial care and support organization is really what we're for, entrepreneurs in the firm and in Thrival. Cause we know the struggles entrepreneurs have. It's not the easiest life you choose to run. No. And you need a lot of people around you, cause you can kind of feel crazy sometimes being on your own. But we're all about building community, having other people, transparently supporting, coaching, consulting, guiding, leading, you know, creating mistakes in front of each other. That stuff just makes us all better. And Thrival's a safe place to do that inside of some private, confidential places. And firms, owners open up. They talk about their struggles, and we try to work through it together in a private place. So it's so valuable.
Yeah, I wish more firm leaders would take advantage of the many communities that we have.
Yeah. 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 And there's more communities popping up, right? Because of their intense value to this world. People are seeing that now. And I guess the pandemic really brought that about. It's like we were alone. And it's like you don't need to be alone, but humans do not need to be by themselves.
Right. Now, what advice do you two have for firm owners and firm leaders who want to create better firms?
That's a big question. I'll give that to Julie.
Yeah, I know all I don't these know. Questions. You could talk for an hour.
I know.
That's a big, and I'm not sure we're qualified to give that advice. Maybe we are. We're battling through it every day ourselves.
Yeah.
And you know, grabbing for joy sometimes, and sometimes it's just there. I think we take a holistic view of that, you know. Work is life is work is life. It's a work-life integration. It's one thing, not a balance on a scale. And so learning to fit all of those things together into that one life, it's a challenge to get to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's a privilege too, to be able to run your own firm. That's a privilege that I think we can forget in the everyday. Probably if I had to boil it down, I would think, just hearkening back to something we said earlier, the becoming a master of time, not mastered by time, and the intentional use of time is really a key. And it's a hard one for entrepreneurs, Jason can tell you, because it feels like a restriction of freedom, but it's not. It's one of those ironies where the intentional use of your time and your value and your effort produces something, and it produces the freedom and the joy that you're looking for. So we'll ask ourselves a couple of questions quite often. Any strategic decision or change we want to make or anything like that, we'll ask ourselves, you know, are the things we're doing right now and the decisions we're making right now, are they leading us to the place we're wanting to go, or are they not? So we'll ask that question, and then, you know, we'll ask also of each other. And I asked Jason this years ago when he was really at a crossroads of what do I want Thrival and Blummer to become. It's when I worked for him, and kind of laid out his vision and the question. And we still ask each other this question now: is, well, do you want what that means? Do you want what that vision and that goal means? All the iterative steps between here and there that we're going to take on the path, is that what you want? Because that's what's between you,
right, you and
your goal. And so learning to filter things like that, because you never reap in the season you sow. Never.
Yeah.
And so it may take some time to get to the iteration and the joy of something you're looking at. So finding the joy in the everyday is knowing, no, I want what that means. I have a purpose. I know what I'm doing. It's intentional. I'm moving forward one day at a time to that place I want to be down the road. So that's getting a little philosophical, but Jason, what would you add to that? I don't know.
Well, it's just part of the principles we teach about entrepreneurship. You know, Julie was referencing really some pretty deeper principles. And I mean, things like we like to tell our Thrival members these four phases. We tell them there's a tilling, there's a sowing, and there's a reaping, and there's a growing. And, you know, it's to help the entrepreneur entrepreneurs want it now. That's me. I'm describing myself. It's like, start a business and it blows up. It's awesome. And you're like, woohoo, I'm ruling the world. And it doesn't actually work that way. Now that I know,
no.
But you find the joy is in the journey of you realizing patiently that there's a phase of tilling, you know, it's breaking up the ground. That can be trying to let your market know you exist. And, you know, marketing sometimes takes a couple years just to let that market know you exist. And then it's sowing, it's starting to plant seeds, and those just grow up later. They come up later when you finally get to eat the fruit of what you've created. And that patience is so tough for entrepreneurs. So we remind them that the work you're doing now, that's the part that's joyful. Joy is often, it's a hard fought journey. Often we want it to be automatic and fluffy and fun. Joy comes from staying on the path and fighting through some of the hard things, because it does come later, but it's an investment now for a future payoff, oftentimes for entrepreneurs, and they don't like it. So the cool stories we hear online are, you know, people who say, my firm's awesome. It's I've grown 400%. And we're all like, why can't I do that? And it's just an anomaly. It's just not always or mostly true. Life does play out differently. And we think better. The joy is in a hard fought journey in the day to day. That's when you find your value. That's when you're in a trench with somebody working hard and you're going, wow, that person beside me is digging ditches with me and they're pretty awesome. Wow, I can't believe they're down here with me. They didn't leave and go home early. They stayed with me. That's when you go, wow, this is awesome. I never would have met that person in that way had we not gone through this together. So I think those are some of the things we've learned. Now we're getting philosophical, Liz.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. I like the philosophy, but I want to be conscious of our time, because I know you two are on a tight schedule.
Yeah.
So I think that's a perfect note to end our conversation on. Now, if listeners want to connect with you, what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, people who follow me know that I produce a lot of content. That's part of my job and my role, which is probably, it's one of my favorite parts of my role. Not everybody knows that, but I love to produce content. It's a lot of fun for me. So Thrival.com has a lot of stuff on it. So just reading through the kinds of programs we have, the kinds of membership levels you can join, and the big long list of things that you get as a member of Thrival, the programs you can join in July, the conferences you can come to, the registration pages. And then I would say our YouTube channel, the Thrival YouTube channel, if you just look up Thrival on YouTube, there might be an old channel on there, but the newest channel, we got to make sure we merge those. The newest channel has tons of just video snippets I do every week in studios, a few years worth of our podcast. Our podcast is in its 13th year, so it doesn't have all of the episodes, but it has the past few years, I think. And then if you need anything else, just info@thrival.com. Julie and I do coaching and we do firm consulting. We lead firms through transformation, 1 and 2 year transformational events. So that's it. Julie, anything else of where to find us you can think of?
Nope, that does it.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome.
Well, it's been just amazing and a great honor to have you on here. And thank you so much for sharing your intellectual capital with the listeners here.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I hope that two of you have a great rest of your day and look forward to running into you at another conference sometime.
Okay. Thank you, Liz. Take care. We appreciate your show. Take care. Bye-bye.
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 Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to CPATrendlines.com.